So that's the thing. EU companies will always have to be registered in Europe. That's and have to register have into attention the mandatory legislation to enter Europe, and then in the country they want to enter, tax legislation and employer legislation, of course. When we talk, and now I can talk about hemp directly, there are mandatories to the different fields of the.
Hey guys, it's Mandy with Global Hemp Association. I wanted to say thank you so much for joining. I'm excited about the opportunity to build a relationship and connect this supply chain. I mean, after all, that's why we started the association. Our association was built on the foundation of connecting supply chain, building relationships, and helping you grow your business. Anyone from farmers, manufacturers, and distributors, people that are passionate about the supply chain, and those creating products selling into biofuels, plastics, textiles, construction, and building materials.
Hello, hello. Sophia, welcome, and thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you, everybody, that's chiming in and listening. I'm really excited for this conversation. We're definitely stepping outside of our industry to talk about policy and navigating business and business decisions. And so I'm really excited to have you, Sophia, especially on the international markets over in Europe. And so also, if anybody is listening, if you guys find anything useful in any of our videos, please like and share our content. The goal is really to get the information out there and help make connections and drive business. And so the best way to do that is for everybody to share and definitely, promote the content. So please, if you guys need anything, don't hesitate to reach out, but please help us out by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Facebook, Twitch. We go live on LinkedIn every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at this time. So thank you very much for joining, and thank you for our sponsors. So before I keep chatting and going on, Sophia, I'd love to hand it over to you and give a quick intro about who you are and what you're doing. And yeah, why are we on here today?
Well, thanks, Mandy, for having me and for this opportunity. I'm also super excited for the opportunity of talking to you. This is a very interesting topic. Well, I'm a founder of Loyal Ecosystem. We are a consultancy working in Europe, and our main goal is to help companies to solve their challenges through stakeholder engagement, meaning understanding who are their stakeholders, how to reach them, how to integrate them in their strategies, and how to work together with them to reach their goals. And we founded the company about 8 years ago, so we're almost teenagers. And we are very, very, very happy about the results so far. And we see the company and also our work as an ecosystem. And because of that, we work in different units that look into different topics of this stakeholder engagement. We have a business unit that will look at how business prepare for the challenges that we have in the 21st century that have already been so many and for sure will be many, many more. We have a behavior unit that works in what's behavior, understanding behavior and how to change behaviors on our different stakeholders. And we have the policy unit that's where my expertise. We look at policies, regulations, and we help our clients throughout the world to reach, to get to their goals of expansion, entering new countries, entering new areas of the globe. And for me, it's super exciting to work and the way we work, because we're never closed in one industry area. So already having the opportunity to discuss this industry, hemp industry, is super interesting, because it's never a boring day. You're always learning a bit more, understanding other topics and other areas, and knowing a lot of different people. And today it's you, in my case.
Yeah. So knowing a little bit about the hemp industry, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are some related verticals or success stories that you've had, maybe not with specific clients, but like I said, in the sum, that may relate or correspond or even be the same as our industry, right? Like agriculture or manufacturing or something like that, right?
Yeah. We work, we have different strategies for different clients, and I can tell you completely different things. So in stakeholder engagement and stakeholder management for an agri-food company, we created, even before we had our own company, the team created a project made to engage with all the stakeholders in fruit agriculture, so fruiticulture, I think. And we helped this agri-food company that's focused on juices, okay. Pretty much to work together with all the policymakers, but also the farmers. And what was interesting, we had to find a common goal to everyone. And the common goal was that we needed to promote local fruit, national fruit. And so we ended up founding a project that includes an academy to help farmers, new farmers. That's a tendency. Also, people are starting again to be farmers in Europe. Mm-hmm. So new farmers to understand how to work, how to understand best practices, how to know other businesses that could be their partners. So we formed this academy. There's also an observatory, understanding what consumers think, how they act. And it is also an area focusing on teaching and giving a legacy to children and to the younger population through work in schools and working with specific learning institutions for kids, all about promoting fruit, national fruit for these clients. And really, this is a project that has been key to position this particular company in their national territory as the company that is focused on fruit farming, okay, and national fruit that's DOP, protected origin. Protected origin. That's something that we have here in Europe, the DOP fruits or produce.
Okay.
Other projects that I can relate to, looking at talking to you, is, for example, helping a completely different area, mobility, helping startups get into Europe. So startups from the MIT. That work on mobility, on soft mobility. And already we brought two to Europe, helping them understand what are the regulations, what do you need to work with to create a company, and then to operate, to have a license to operate as a company. And so we helped two already, one before in 2019, and now this year another one. And we did from scratch. We helped them create the company in specific countries, helped them understand what are the regulations in specific countries for their business, and also do the connections to expand business. For example, in a specific country, in Portugal, for example, we went to region from region with them to get to the cities on board to their mobility solution and to use it in their cities. And it has been very, very interesting. I don't know, I can keep talking, but.
I tell you, like, your first two examples, I feel like perfect fit for our industry, right? We're talking about scaling and really having to secure our farm makers. Right. This goes back to making sure our farmers are taken care of and that there's this trusted relationship and being able to scale at community level so that we can enter a new market. Right. It's such a foreign, not only foreign, but scary or intimidating market for a lot of people. Right. Yeah. So I think that there are a lot of similarities to the example you gave as a success story. And I think it kind of resonates to this out of box thinking for each of your clients, right? That there are unique situations for each of those. Right. So can you talk to me a little bit about, if somebody wants to engage with you, what does it look like? How do people engage? How do people contact you?
Well, there's a lot of connections, personal connections from former clients that are now in other places or that talk to about us, which is super gratifying for us, of course.
Yeah.
But of course, there's always our website, our loyalecosystem.com website, that is live and that people can know a bit more of what we do. And personally, if anyone wants, they can contact me by my email, sophia.cartol. Yeah, I think you have it. You put it down, right?
Yeah.
Super available. If anyone wants to hear more about us, I'm happy to schedule a 15-minute or more talk because I love talking with people. And that's that's also a problem I have.
Isn't that how it always goes? Yes. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's how they can reach us, either through the website, we're available on LinkedIn also. Loyal Ecosystem is just easiest searching us, and you'll get to us.
Can you walk through how to expand into Europe? Can you walk through some of the...
in theory.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of... There's a basics of expansion, right?
Yeah.
There's the basics of expansion. So you want to expand to another region, another country, another continent. First of all, you need, I think the first step, and I think some things I'm going to say, it applies to everything, not only Europe. You need to do some research and understand what's the scenario out there, right? But you do need to have a more or less local partner. In Europe, I would say you can have a European partner that can help you navigate throughout the different little things that Europe has. One complaint I always read about or listen when I'm talking to US or Canadians or other countries that are not in Europe is like, oh, they're so fragmented. They all have their little countries with different little things in the regulations. Yes, we are a community. It's having to come into mind that we are the European community is a community, okay, of countries. We have there is a common there are common policies. Yeah. For example, we travel everywhere in Europe. We import and export everywhere in Europe without taxes. So entering Europe, it's a good way to expand to other countries for sure. In all that its specifications, you know, and this is still not going directly into hemp.
Right.
Already. But there are different countries, different cultures, different stakeholders. So for sure, my first advice would be research, understand, and get a partner that can help you do the research and help you understand the different, the little details that make the difference for success.
Sure. What about mandatories for non-EU companies?
Well, that's the thing. EU companies will always have to be registered in Europe. And have to to attention the mandatory legislation to enter Europe, and then in the country they want to enter, tax legislation and employer legislation, of course. When we talk, and now I can talk about hemp directly, there are mandatories to the different fields of the industry. So if you're looking, for example, for farmers, if you want to start cultivating hemp in Europe, you need to be very, 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 very aware of the limits of choosing the varieties right. Because there's a catalog of varieties that are approved. I don't know if you are all aware of that. Okay, so very careful about the varieties, very careful about the levels of THC, because they cannot be over 2.2, although the new cap, the new common agricultural policy will raise that a bit. For 0.3, But it's important to have all that in mind for farming in Europe. Right. Once you will, and also you to sell within Europe, of course, the it's already so controlled. What enters, the varieties you sow and the variety and what's planted, it's already so controlled that imports and exports within Europe go well. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's the main things. And then, of course, as I said, coming back to what I said, you need to understand the legislation of the countries that you want to get into. Some countries, and talking specifically about the hemp industry, have national legislation. They are much stricter, for about hemp and cultivation, farming, and all the businesses related to hemp. Ireland is an example that I know of. Other countries are opening up. Besides, of course, the France and the Netherlands that are already countries that are very, very interesting. Italy is opening up. Greece is opening up. Portugal is opening up a lot, especially regarding medicinal cannabis.
Yeah.
So it's a way of, if you have a business in the hemp industry in the large spectrum, I would have to say there are different things to look at according to the business you want to launch in Europe. And of course, different stakeholders also to look into.
Okay, so talk to me about how companies navigate the stakeholders in Europe.
Well, there's two things.
Ecosystem, right?
The ecosystem, the great ecosystem. There's two things about Europe. So as I said, there's the Brussels ecosystem. And if you're starting to... if companies want to get full speed and want to get in a very multinational way, Brussels is a way, because some areas are still gray areas. What we have seen in the last 2-3 years or more is that technology, behavior, companies and businesses are evolving, and even the situations that we were put on by the pandemics made everything evolve much quicker than regulations are and stakeholders are. So in some cases it can be important to have a good mapping of who's who in Europe, in Brussels, who's who working to in this area regarding the parliament, especially the parliament and the commission, and then understanding the countries you are in. I cannot stress enough how it is important to map all the stakeholders and reach them preemptively. It's meaning don't manage your stakeholders last minute. We need to have a plan. You need to start working with stakeholders, knowing them, understanding them.
Right, like understanding your relationship and your able to approach them, and not all of the stakeholders may be your partners, right? But if they're if they're key players in the industry, understanding what makes them tick and how to help or how to work together or collaborate versus
definitely, and also some non-obvious. You need to be very aware of the non-obvious stakeholders. Looking back at the mobility client we had, we had to reach out to non-obvious stakeholders at a given moment. We were talking and discussing to bring on board our partners, the Blind Association, National Blind Association, or the National Disabled People Association.
The
non-obvious, because they would be impacted by new mobility solutions in their cities, and they would be in working to. It's important to navigate them, understanding the non-obvious. Getting someone out of your business helps you get the non-obvious. So you're focusing on hemp, and you're coming to a new country. Already, you can do your research, and you know who are the stakeholders in your specific industry. But you need someone out of the box to give you the non-obvious. And also to be the non-involved party who can speak with the non-obvious and then discuss their problems together with your problems and find that common ground. And it's super important to have a common ground to work on and to build on. And this is I think it's the most important thing to work in the EU ecosystem as a whole and then in each country.
Yes.
And it's quite interesting because, again, looking at the ecosystem of the countries, of course, different countries, different kinds of ruling, different methods of ruling, different methods and also of personalities, the different personalities. So you need to be aware of all that when working in Europe.
You answered like my next three questions right there. So that was perfect.
Okay. I'm eating the time now.
Oh, it was perfect. Okay, so what have been some of the biggest challenges that you've overcome in building these, you know, opportunities and working with these clients?
Yeah, so I think the first challenges that everyone finds and we help clients is first of all looking at this very complex regulatory framework. From someone who's from outside, you have to answer to be accordance with the European legislation, but European legislation is also approved by countries and they don't approve exactly like that. You need to be compliant with different regulations from different countries and from different expectations. For example, some countries allow that national cultivation of varieties of hemp with higher THC levels, for example. Others do not. Some countries are completely against medicinal cannabis and others will allow it and some allow it to a certain extent. So it's a complex framework to work in.
Yes.
This is the first of them. And then looking at hemp and at the business itself, the main challenge that I see that we saw as analyzing the hemp industry in Europe was the lack of transformation industries in the value chain, you know. So we have, there is a lot of already some acres cultivated, not as much as we could want, of course, or partners would want, but there is a lack of transformation industry. And this is something that it needs to be worked upon. I would encourage people from other countries who are experienced in transformation, understanding what's the aspect in Europe? How can we do this in Europe? From what I understand from our analysis, much of the hemp produced in Europe is being exported to China at this point to be transformed. So it's a lose-lose situation, I would say. And then, of course, let me look at my notes here. It's the thing about the lack of understanding that most regulators have, and I think for sure this is all across the globe. The myths about the hemp business, the myths about debunking myths about what's hemp, what's not hemp. The industry itself, it still has a lot of prejudices, I would say, especially in some countries. So sure. My nationality, I'm Portuguese. In Portugal, we talk a lot about medical cannabis. And we talk a lot about, we're discussing laws to have, allow people undergoing medical cannabis to go to have personal plants. But it's going back and forth because of a lot of discussions on the topic. And I know it's a sensible topic, but this is something that happens in not only on this specific area, which is okay, we're still studying it and understanding it, but also when we say hemp in Europe, some countries, some stakeholders still need some fast fact sheet, you know, saying what it is, what it's not, how it can be used, what industries can benefit, how it benefits green economy, because for sure, and this is something that is very interesting, there is a lot of interest, institutional interest on promoting hemp as a crop. There are a lot of interested, interesting in growing the number of farming, the farmers in hemp in Europe. But I would say there is still a need to understand the countries and understand and how the countries understand the topic. So there is there's a lot of work in there. It's still a niche.
Jackie, I agree with you 100% on this, that this non-obvious stakeholders is a key thing that we need to be paying attention to. And it's funny, this comes up a lot in our industry, right? Is we get stuck talking to ourselves. Our industry is still small, right? And
yes.
So, you know, really bridging that gap. And you talked a lot about education, and then you mentioned a fact sheet, you know, that, you know, policymakers and lobbyists, they need that little fact sheet. What is that message? What is that? You know, how do we as an association and industry stakeholders, right, really move that message forward coming from someone, you know, in your shoes that have been very involved in the policy and consulting, you know, groups around the policy for expansion?
Mm-hmm. Well, for sure, I would say make it simple, make it clear, make it science-based.
Yes.
I'm preaching to the priest, right? I'm preaching, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, it's that. It's know what are the ticking points on the other side. You already said that, and in what are the concerns of the other side? Looking at the European stakeholders and European governments, I think in the last 2 years showed us. That and this year is still showing in Europe that we are very, very, very dependent on other continents, and then we need to be more self-sufficient. I think this is a big haha also to a lot of countries and a lot of, but especially Europe. I think the governments, the central government in Brussels. And then the member states got that Eureka moment. So that's why it's important to understand what's ticking them and how can they how can we help them be on that path to self-sufficiency, to be more industrial Europe, or even the countries you're working with. There are countries that, for some reason or another, with the entering Europe, the EC, they lost some of their traditional industries. They, because of the common commerce that we have in Europe, there are a lot of countries that, for example, started. Working only some areas that they are very, very good on, like tourism and right. or industry or car industry, and they forgot some way. Forgot is like that. Other industries, other sectors that you need to work together. And I think the last 2 years and this one also is being very, very demonstrative, or were very demonstrative that we need to have a strong Europe, and then countries need to have strong sectors. All the business sectors need to be very strong. Of course, you can be specialized in one business area.
You can't afford to be absent in any.
Yes, that's the main thing. And so entering already in, going ahead already in some topics I was going to say ahead, there's a lot of support for agriculture in Europe. There are incentives to grow crops in Europe. And then the common agriculture policy is working towards also towards hemp. The EC, the European Union, is very interesting in promoting hemp as a material and working as a material. So I think it's a good, I don't want to promote my own continent here, but I think it is a good opportunity to expand.
Yes.
At this point. Also, of course, there are the areas, CBD products that are already also very, 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 very on hype in some countries. Although the EC, the European Community, is not that in that fast in being, they're being complicated with the regulation. Josh would say that.
Well, I think again, you know, everybody knows I'm a big proponent for the fiber and grain market, you know, for the industrial applications and the protein and the food and the animal feed and
Some
of these big markets that become very impactful for small communities or small countries or rural underserved areas, right? So.
Yeah, and I think that's what I see, what our analysis shows, and I see as a person that was looking at this, it's lacking in Europe. It's those, everyone is looking at the hype thing, I would say, but there's the other part, the industrial use, textiles, building. It's an area that needs to be, more and more explored, especially again in transformation and in farming, of course, because at this point we have France, that's his main country farming and producing hemp crops, but from there I don't know how many acres in the hundreds of acres, you go to dozens of acres in the next two countries. So it is important to distribute more, I would say.
Well, and you know, I think that's part of kind of what's been exposed, right? Is the need to be able to redirect the supply chain, I think is, you know, a good way to say it, right? That if something we had this happen here in the States, you know, land hurricane came in, or you know, a tornado comes in and wipes out an entire facility or farm or, you know, millions of acres. And then that supply chain could potentially be broken had the manufacturers or processors not also had farms in multiple areas within the country, right? And so I think that's, you know, that's a good example of what's needed in order to scale the industry and compete with, you know, these other commodities or some of these products, is like, we've got to be able to distribute our workload and, you know, product or inputs. And so.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. And for sure, looking at different countries will give you the insight on what part of the value chain you could work on in each country, because each country is very different.
Ask you that, but I knew the answer would be like, well, it depends.
Well, it's Europe.
It's an open-ended question.
it's Europe. So you can, of course, you analyze not only the legislation and the regulations, which is my area, but there's a lot of things like the fields that the terrain that we have, to the climate that we have. And now I'm going to another, we can go to another completely different topic. Climate change is affecting Europe in a crazy way at this point. I don't know if it reached the US, but London had 40 degrees Celsius just last week. That's immense. I don't know how to say it in Fahrenheit, but it's immense. It's Southern Europe temperatures. So. Right. If you are a farmer, you need to know this. I know that the EC is very focused on having crops and having agriculture being intensified in the continent, and also having crops and industries that go towards the green economy. And the greener the better, of course, because we need to go ahead, go ahead.
So the swing is 14 degrees Celsius to 57, almost 58, well, 57 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's cold there? Like it got cold or?
No, it got extremely hot.
Hot. Gotcha.
Because usually, I can do the conversion. Usually the England doesn't go up beyond 20 Celsius.
And it was how many degrees Celsius?
40.
40.
40. No, not 14. 14 would be nice for them.
That's what I said. I was like, well, 57 degrees is like pretty good. Like that's cool.
No, 14 is their life. 14
yeah,
is their life.
Yeah, 104. Yeah. 104 degrees. Yes.
Yeah. And this is something you have in Southern Europe.
Yeah.
And already we are seeing examples from other industries. The wine industry, for example, in France, is already using the varieties of vineyards that are originated from Southern Europe, Spain, Portugal, hotter places, you know, because their usual varieties don't produce at all anymore.
They weren't strong enough to survive the heat.
Yeah,
or the pain,
yeah.
Right.
So Europe is struggling with the need of having crops that will be able to survive and to also revitalize the agriculture. And also they are struggling with the need of industries that will revitalize the country's economy. One important message that we have to share is that after the pandemics, we have all countries, the EC has a resilience and recovery plan, the European community, and each country has their own specific plan that uses European funds. So there are European funds to build industry in Europe. There are European funds to help industry areas in different with different priorities within different countries. Main priorities have been agriculture, the green economy, of course digitalization after the 2 years of COVID, but being resilient and being able to have the country's own industry is super important for governments right now. And as we are
localizing the manufacturing,
back
or reshoring.
Yes, having manufacturing back into Europe is super important because in many products, Europe has been living from China or from other countries in Southeast Asia. So it's important for countries to revitalize their economy and to revive their economies and to have new industries coming. So bring a group of people to Europe and do a stroll around, and you'll find we can help you. I'm just saying.
I would love to. Yes, please. I mean, kiss my arm.
Let's prepare a road trip around Europe to talk to each other.
That's like one area I just haven't traveled that I really want to. And of course, it was on my bucket list this last couple of years, but it was a little bit restricted. It kind of handcuffed us. So, I would love to. Love to. Well, anything else? Anything as far as business? You know, I was going to ask you a little bit about those common policies or areas where opportunity would really be open, you know, like you said, for funding. And I'm looking at funding in multiple different ways, right? How can we find funding for our industry around economic development, localizing manufacturing, big agriculture, you know, thinking outside of the CBD or health and wellness?
And
more into big products. And so do you have anything more to add there?
Well, I didn't want to study the direct monetary funds that are open, but usually you have funding
for startups. What about general categories?
Well, you have European funding for startups to open in innovation to build in different areas. Research and innovation are big areas that are very open or prone to receive funding. Modernization, modernizing the industry, and of course, again, the resilience plans of all countries have a strong focus on bringing new industries into the countries. Okay, and so if you reach, if you arrive into a country and you say I'm going to build manufacturing plants and create, I don't know, 300, 400 jobs, it's already it's going to be supported.
Yeah.
So it's a way, as I said, it's the hemp industry itself is so wide, it's as wide as the European Union and their and the different and the European countries. So it really depends on case to case. I know I'm being very, very generic on what I'm saying.
Because, but it's hard to be specific around the topics, right? And I say this too. The hemp industry is not, I mean, it's an industry, but it really is, it's a tool for all of these other industries to be more sustainable, right? Hemp in a product creates a whole plethora of potential for ESG scores or sustainability or a localizing supply chain or,
Yeah, that's it. You have, it's a very diverse industry that impacts a lot of other industries. Yeah. So it's looking case to case, you can do wonders, I would say.
It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So what excites you about a new industry like hemp, you know, or working with somebody potentially in the hemp industry? You know, what drives you?
Yeah, well, for sure, the innovative aspect of the industry. Again, going outside the CBD and the wellness and the medical, and so, that's the hype. What the industry potential of this, the new building materials, the new possibility of substituting plastics via bioplastics, that whole plethora of innovation that is possible. And I should say that universities in Europe are good partners to research and in new materials. Also looking again, non-obvious stakeholders, look at the, when looking at a country, look at academia, who can be your researchers. This is really
the students, like I said, for a long time are going to change the world with this, right? They're excited. Yeah. They're passionate about the change. They're passionate about, like, the problem is staring them in the face and has been for years, right? And so they're eager and it gets exciting. Yeah.
Yes, it's super exciting. It's super interesting that looking at looking in the agriculture part of it, it's super interesting to understand that this was a crop that was, it was endogenous in Europe for hundreds of years. Yeah. And then it disappears or it's very, very, very low key.
So, it's shamed, right?
It is shamed. And this is something I like. One thing I really love is debunking myths and working in industries that have a lot of prejudices, because I like working and showing. I don't have always we don't have to invent anything if the proof is there. If it is science-based, myths have to be debunked with the truth. There is fake news in everything.
I feel like the hemp industry really opened this up between the hemp industry and the pandemic, right? Of really driving focus to question, not necessarily doubt, but, you know, to evaluate what I've been told.
Yes, yes, for sure. And it excites me giving people the information about an industry that's completely overlooked.
Yes.
I feel it's overlooked. I was discussing this, preparing this session with you. I was telling everyone, we need to work on hemp. There must be hemp industry in Europe. Why are we not doing this?
Yes.
It's super interesting. Especially industrial uses, as I said, mm-hmm. textile for construction. The plastics are the one that blow me away. We can have plastics.
So, it's what lit the fire for me. You know, when I had this aha moment about the mm-hmm. plastics market and hemp kind of crossing paths as hemp died, you know, and hemp plastic took off. And I was like, wait a minute, we've had a solution this whole time.
And you don't see, no one saw it or no one used it. Of course, someone saw it, but they didn't use it.
Right.
So it's that's what excites me. Also, as you see, I'm always passionate going into a new topic that I have to work on, and so hemp is it was really a haha industry, to be honest. It's similar to not similar. I had other industries that are okay. This is interesting. The legislation, okay, this is interesting. Let's work on it, but. It's the possibilities it encloses. It was the variety of possibilities that that are being overlooked, actually.
Yeah. Oh, well, and the amount of research, right? There's a lot of research that has to go into this.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that what gets tricky, and you kind of brought it up when we were talking about the non-obvious, right? Mm-hmm. Is who else?
Mandy, I lost you. I don't know if it's me or you. Oh.
Can you hear me? I don't know what happened. I'm so sorry. My internet just started like turning and so I hope you can hear me, but it wasn't you. It looked like it was my computer. So
okay. I was worried because
nope, you're perfect. But I was saying that. So sorry for everybody else that's listening. If we lost you for a second. Thank gosh for edits after this. We can just chop this up and.
Yeah, my scared face. I lost it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm always frozen. You know this.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're back. Yeah. So I had a question really quick then. As people are moving forward to develop this and moving mm-hmm. forward, you know, in figuring out who those non-obvious people are, what advice would you give them around, you know, the categories of research and development as well as like people that are processing or manufacturing and doing the work? I feel like those are two different categories, maybe the same strategy, but yeah, how do you recommend really like evaluating as we get into this so that you can make mm-hmm. smarter business decisions?
Yeah. Well, it's like looking at who is going to be at the end of your product in research and development or even in industry. Who's going to be on the other hand of your and the end in the final end? And who will be in the middle? Example. I'll give you an example. You can do an amazing flooring material for hospitals. This happens to us also. You have a wonderful flooring material for hospitals and in antibacterial and all that. And you are going to sell it to hospitals, of course. The thing is, you never talk to an architect who has to design hospitals and you don't know that hospitals don't have edges, so the flooring has to bend and your material does not bend. So talk to everyone, you know.
That's great really advice. Yes,
really talk to everyone.
Great and advice.
It's the non-obvious will always be the ones. I'm giving you all my gold now.
Okay, here's the trick though, right? it's one thing to say and to talk about it. It's another thing to be with someone who's done it and knows the ins.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's faster and you've got so much knowledge around it. And so, yes, I think that this is great, you know, great advice, but it's still getting in and not, like it or not, not everybody is good at opening doors. Not everybody is good at picking up the phone and it's not a skill for everyone. And so I commend you. I love it. Yeah.
We really have to be open to talking to people, knowing people, and understanding what are their points on it, and understanding who will need your product again, who will need it, who will use it, and who will have to deal with it. You know.
What about for building teams, right? As I'm looking to, or a lot of people within this industry, right, are looking to build teams around processing or scale of their processing to multiple regions, right? Mm-hmm. Or even just to scale big enough to secure contracts viable contracts. What advice would you have about, you know, the stakeholders for team development? Same thing?
Yeah, actually.
Okay.
Look at non-obvious. It's talk to people and look at non-obvious. For example, I can tell you that Loyal has a team that includes geneticists, that includes marketing, includes economists, publicists, but also neuroscientists, biotechnology, lawyers. So we don't, and not necessarily we are working, I don't have a geneticist doing genetic testing, of course. I don't have a biotechnology or a neuroscience expert working only on neurosciences. I have these people who have different backgrounds, different understandings, bringing their best to the solutions of our clients.
Yes. Yes.
And nowadays it's more and more important and more interesting and easy even to have multicultural and not only in the aspect of multi countries, you know, diversity is not only in what comes to countries and whatever, it's really also on the backgrounds of people.
I think that's key, right? It's amazing. Everybody could be the same age, but the way that they've lived their life and been raised exposes completely different perspectives to solving problems. And that becomes powerful as like you said, the diversity of it.
The same way that we, and this is how we Loyal manage to be always out of the box for our clients, because we ourselves are out of the box for among ourselves. So discussions are always very, very diverse. And that's where the best solutions emerge. And I think that if you're building a team not necessarily in Europe, but building a new team, it's important to look into that also and understand how can the different people add not only to your business, but to your purpose as a company.
Love it. Okay, well, I'm going to come visit. I'm going to come over and say hello, and I would love to see you.
Yes, come to Portugal.
Yes.
To Portugal and let's meet up. I would very much like that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to put it on my calendar, and I'm dead serious because I would love to take a tour around Europe. Any other advice? Anything else you want to give? Anybody you want to highlight or give shout outs to before we sign off?
The advice is don't jump in without trying to understand the context here in Europe. That would be the advice. Don't jump unprepared, but I think this is management 101, but sometimes it needs to be said. Thank you for having me. And the opportunity to be here today. It was super interesting. And of course, we're super open and loyal to hear about the challenges the hemp industry has, in particular, in wants to bring to Europe, for sure. So anyone, feel free to contact. Passing on the publicity. Sorry.
And, I love it. That's perfect. Sorry. Oh, I'm still here. Can you guys hear me okay? I can see my computer is being okay. Okay. Well, before I lose you guys, thank you so much for having or for coming on today. I love learning what you're doing. I love the perspective that we talked about. And I think that it does need to be said is paying attention and setting the foundation and what it means around policy and, you know, building the, like you said, paying attention to each person along that supply chain for the non-obvious. Understanding who our stakeholders are, understanding who's already doing it, making smart business decisions, right? It all just kind of couples together. And so I think it does need to be said. So thank you very much for saying it and paying attention. And I would love to continue the conversation. There's a lot of people doing business, obviously internationally. There's a lot of business coming from Europe to the US and US back to Europe. And so I would love to continue to support that however we can on a global scale. And so, Sophia, I'll make sure that we get your contact info and send out a connection so people can get in touch with you as well if they need services. But then also this afternoon, we have an awesome meeting. Claire Krunk is joining us this afternoon to talk about technical challenges in hemp fiber development, especially in the textile grade, medical grade fiber. And so I'm really excited to hear the conversation, and I invite you guys to join us. You can register on our website at globalhempassociation.org or friendsofhemp.org. You'll be able to find the link to register. It's just a Zoom meeting. You log in, it's Q&A format. And so awesome opportunity. So Sophia, I welcome you and your team also, if you guys are ever interested in learning, kind of seeing what's out there and what we're doing and, you know, getting more involved, I invite you to also participate. There's lots of great discussions and back and forth. And so thank you again very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Other than that, you guys, we'll see you next time. Next week, I've got a couple of interviews. It looks like we'll be doing something Tuesday and Thursday next week, same time, 10 a.m. And then another textile discussion on next Tuesday. So two interviews Tuesday, just like this week on Thursday. Today's Thursday, I guess. But talking about same thing, textile fiber spinning and the profitability of fiber. So again, get on there and register. Other than that, we'll see you guys next time. Okay. Thank you. See you later.